Blog Talk Radio. Your host, Merle Exit. Oh, it's 6 p.m. here on my time in New York City. It's cold outside, but I guess a little warmer than I think. Some of the snow is melting, and they actually took some of the garbage away from my house. Well, that's a whole other story. We're going to have some really good show, a mix-up. Yeah, we're all over the place today. The original GLBT Expo is coming to New York on March 12th and 13th, and we're going to find out what we should expect. We'll talk with Charmaine from the RDP group that produces the show. Also, have you ever eaten a Dr. Cracker? Well, these are crackers with lots of nutrition and nuts. Well, not nuts. I think they're seeds. They're not nuts. I think I want to distinguish that. And then George will tell us all about, them while I have them in front of me and munching on one. And then we're going to go to Texas. I'm going to be drinking a fresh glass of lemonade made with, well, as it turns around, a Ponderosa lemon. Yeah, we'll talk about what that is. We'll have Bobby Bell to tell us about his citrus fruit and more from Texas. And then we're going to back to Fort Lauderdale at the 15th Street Fisheries as Mark Dubin will tell us about its location at the marina and the menu. We have our first, actually, we're going to be beginning with George and the Dr. Cracker. George, is that you?
It sure is. I'm right here.
Dr. Cracker. Well, Cracker. Is it Cracker? Well, Cracker. Dr. Cracker.
Cracker,
right.
Please. Cracker with a K.
Right. Well, by the way, I have them in front of me. I was going to munch on them while we were doing it. I had it for breakfast.
Oh, good. Well, I was going to say, it's not good to munch on while you're trying to talk because, one, they're awfully loud and they're forbidden in all movie theaters.
Oh. I understand.
Popcorn's okay, Dr. Cracker, no, too loud.
and I do understand. I mean, they're not the softest things in the world. I mean, they don't hurt my teeth, but that, you know, they're pretty noisy. They're flatbreads. So it's just
Really what it is, it's just a bread dough that's been rolled out very flat, and most crackers are made with lots of shortening or different fats, and we do that with either very, very minimum of fats or no fats, and what it does then is it makes it, what it really is, it's like a crust of bread. Thick, crunchy, and lots of, bold, weedy flavor is the way I'd put it.
Okay. So before we get into describing them all, where did this, come about, this Dr. Cracker thing?
Oh, I used to work in the bakeries at Whole Foods. I was one of the originators or started with Whole Foods very early in my life. I'm a trained baker. I went through a baker's apprenticeship when I was 20 in Germany. And it took me a while to get back to baking, but when I did, I always thought about, I live in Texas as well, so I guess this is becoming the Texas program, but, we eat a phenomenal number of chips down there, and I always thought, well, gosh, chips just aren't that healthy, and I'd really like to have a healthier type of cracker, because I've always been a huge cracker fan my whole life, and growing up in Michigan, you know, soup and crackers all the time. But I really wanted to have a healthy cracker, and so I started to work on it when I was at Whole Foods and got too busy doing just baking and being an executive within Whole Foods structure that I didn't finish the project. And then when I was no longer working for Whole Foods, I thought more about it and discovered somebody in Europe who was doing it, and so started a partnership with that person, recruited some American partners, and that was about 7 years ago, and we've split from our European German partner and just do it ourselves now.
Oh, that's great. So as you said, this comes, I guess this wasn't an area of Texas. It's in Plano.
Plano. Plano. Home of Lance Armstrong. But I live in Austin. I do the sales from Austin. My partner Karsten lives up in Plano, and so I do sales and marketing, and he concentrates on running the bakery there in Plano.
Oh, I see. Yeah. And by the way, the first thing I wanted to ask, because they were just talking about this on the news in terms of fiber. They're talking about how much fiber people should have and the whole bit. Was this something that, you know, something that's a nice way to have fiber?
Oh, gosh. Merle, the news was fantastic. They've always known that fiber will reduce blood sugar levels and lower cholesterol, and it's a good way to cure, ameliorate, heal chronic diseases, but they've never shown that it actually prolongs or staves off or keeps the Grim Reaper at bay, and they showed that men and women both live 20% longer if they're eating the right amount of fiber, and one of the things that they pointed out is that the fiber that seems to be most important in that, or to have that effect, is grain-based fiber. So that's what Dr. Cracker does. We do whole grains and whole seeds, and seeds are really the important or the biggest contributor of fiber to our flatbreads, our crackers, because like the flax seeds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, they all have about 30% or 40% fiber in their content.
So in other words, like there's no nuts, there's seeds.
No nuts. Nuts are a big no-no these days when you're baking, just because there's so many allergies out there, and tree nuts and peanuts are, we don't use any soy in our bakery and no eggs, so we're pretty much allergen-free bakery except for wheat. Of course, anybody who's celiac shouldn't be eating Dr. Cracker, and for some people, sesame seeds seem to be a hot-button issue too, and we use quite a bit of sesame seeds.
You do, yeah, sesame seeds, you do.
Yeah, sesame seeds are great. Lots of flavor, lots of fiber, and a lot of different minerals.
So basically using sesame seeds, pumpkin seeds, and, you know, it's funny that we used to call them, I don't know why, when I used to buy these, we call them poly seeds. When you used to buy them, like, for these little boxes, and they were like 2 cents, and you broke them up with your teeth and whatever. And I know they're sunflower seeds, right?
Yeah. I don't know them by that name, but yeah, our big three are flax, sunflower, and sesame, and then in a couple of our varieties, like our Seedlander, that's pumpkin and poppy added to it. And in some cases, we get into black sesame seeds as well. But all seeds are powerhouses. I mean, when you think of it, that's it's what nature creates the world is through the plant world through seeds. And so when you're eating seeds, you're eating nature's powerhouse.
It is sunflower seeds, right. I don't know why we call them that. It's a funny thing. It's like you went to the store, you either got a box of 2 cent box of either pumpkin seeds or poly seeds. And it wasn't until years as a kid, and then it wasn't years later that we said, oh, they're sunflower seeds. I don't know what poly meant or whatever, but that's what we had called them. But anyway, to kind of get back to this, so you're not dealing, which is great, you know, you're not dealing with, the nuts are more for the protein rather than fiber, aren't they? Aren't they more like when you're dealing with nuts?
No, nuts themselves also have a great deal of fiber and peanuts. Mm. I've always been a peanut butter fan, and still peanut butter and jelly is one of my favorite dinners or breakfasts in the summer, especially when I don't want anything warm because it's so hot in Texas. But
right.
It's extremely nutritious. But for anybody who has friend or family member who has a peanut allergy, it's just deadly. So it's very important to eat those things. Make sure that they're the choice you put on there, not something that hides
your
food.
Yeah, whatever that's all about, I don't know. All of a sudden, people are allergic to peanuts. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. Just I think a lot of people, health professionals, think that maybe we've lived too clean these days, that, you know, we don't eat enough dirt and are not exposed to enough things early in life. There may be something to that.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, let's get back to your product. Okay, so now you have actually four different types, and then you have two different sizes. Am I correct, right?
Yeah, and we've come up with four new flavors, but yeah, basically we run either the large flatbread size, and we have that in classic three-seed, flax, sunflower, and sesame. Then we have the pumpkin cheddar, which is pumpkin seeds with a cheddar topping. Both of those are wheat, and then we have two spelt varieties that are the seeded spelt, which is, again, spelt flour with flax, sunflower, and sesame, and then the seedlander, which is the one where we add some sweetener to it, some molasses and agave nectar, and that's also 100% whole grain spelt.
Wow.
Spelt is an older form of wheat, a little bit easier to digest. You know, gluten-free foods are in the news. There's a whole group of people, that's about 1% of the population, that actually shouldn't eat any gluten because their celiacs and their intestine rebels against it and will actually kind of eat itself. But there's a whole, as much as 20% of the population that has a wheat allergy or a wheat sensitivity, and wheat tends to make them feel bloated, full, headaches, bowel uncomfortable, and yet most of them can eat spelt. Spelt's a smaller protein molecule, easier to digest, and also tastes good. I like it myself.
Who, by the way, and who is like, are you the person who came up with these, I guess, the recipe for these?
I do some of the recipe inspiration. I still dream about recipes at night, and the one Seedlander, for instance, actually came out of our work at Whole Foods. It was a recipe that came even before that from Wild Oats. So recipes have a way of just moving around from baker to baker. There are no great secrets. Like, anybody could put our recipes together. As long as you know how to bake bread, you know how to bake crackers.
Right, right. Okay. The one of the things I want to go into, so people can get some ideas. Let's talk about, with each of the four, like, what to use them for? What one, you know, what do they work well with, for instance?
Well, if you're familiar with any sort of Scandinavian flatbread concepts, all of these work in the same way. One thing I would say is, like, the pumpkin seed cheddar, that's got cheese on it already, so it's really, all of them are good on their own, but the pumpkin seed cheddar probably the best one alone with a glass of wine, glass of beer. The other one's a great starter food with any of Dr. Cracker is hummus or any of the Mediterranean dips. Hummus, just, you know, hummus, you're getting more whole grains. You get the garbanzo beans, you get tahini in there, lemon and garlic, and those are just fabulous with Dr. Cracker, because you've got the rich, smooth, creamy texture of hummus and that kind of citrusy flavor, and then you've got that very toasty seed flavor and grain flavor from the crackers. And something, and there are people, if you're into cheeses, like, soft cheeses are fantastic. We at the farmer's market in Austin will sample them with a farmstead cheese, a spinach feta, which is delicious. Other people will just melt more cheese on top of them, nuke them in the microwave for 30 seconds, something like that. Great with soups. I like them quite a bit in salads, you know, using them like a crouton, break them up. And I have a couple of recipes on our website, drcracker.com, different summer salads. I use them as thickeners for soups in place of breadcrumbs. So they're just about any way you want. You can use them. Even smoked salmon on them is great.
Well, smoked salmon on any cracker is
great.
Yeah. Lox right. And cream cheese on anything is good.
You got me there. That's true.
Do people ever, like, you know, like when you're having soup, do people, like, put them in the soup as opposed
break
to
them up.
And put it in the
they're
soup. I mean, so it
well,
so you can if you can't if you're not into chewing, it tastes just as good like soggy, so to speak.
Oh yeah, it tastes it's not going to turn mushy. And that's why a lot of people favor Dr. Cracker with dips because they don't break off when you're going into the dip. Another great thing is like with guacamole or in the summertime with fresh tomatoes and avocado. So, but soups, especially at this time of year since it's so cold, is a great way to eat Dr. Cracker.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm going to try. I've been eating it like what I did today is made some scrambled eggs and I just like ate, you know, the crackers with the eggs, you know, munched
like
on them.
Yeah, piece of toast. Yeah.
Yeah.
My son swears that Nutella is fantastic on them too. I don't. Nutella is a little bit too decadent for me, but I can't like cream cheese. Nutella is good on anything, even on just on your finger.
Yeah. Oh. Well, then again, for me in terms of Nutella, I just like. I don't want the calories of the bread or anything. I just take it. I'll just like take a spoonful and just eat the day. Eat the thing. So we got for soups and basically soups, dips.
And always think salad as a crouton. I mean, I eat a tremendous amount of greens. I basically try and follow a vegan diet. I have to eat cheese just to do flavor profiling with Dr. Cracker. But we eat tremendous amounts of greens at home, and so always looking for something extra crunchy with our salads, and so Dr. Cracker really fits that bill.
Yeah, I'm thinking of that because I'm thinking of, you know, the different ways that that I can utilize it, the crackers. I've tasted, and I'm not sure, the one that's the three seed. Now, what are the three seeds in that one?
Flax and Florence sesame. Flax seeds,
okay.
We put flax seeds in everything just because of their fantastic nutritional profile with their omega-3 fatty acids, lots of lignans, and the valuable oil and fiber.
Mm. What I haven't done yet is... taking the, I'm supposed to like whatever I eat that's different, like bring to my chiropractor who does muscle testing to tell me if I have any, like, you know, if I'm not allergic, sensitive or allergic or kind of thing.
I'd be curious to hear what your chiropractor says. The muscle testing is bizarre how accurate it is.
Yeah, I will be interested. I don't have any outright allergies. What I have, in other words, she could tell me if I'm sensitive to something. More natto, or that. And the thing is, if I'm, let's say, sensitive, I won't know what the reaction is. Let's say that I do eat it, and, it's, you know, other than, let's say, if I get a bellyache or something, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But this would be of great interest. So basically, in terms of fiber content, I'm looking at one of the boxes. So one cracker is just 16%. Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah, so that's 4 grams of fiber.
That's 4 grams.
Yeah.
4 grams
of
fiber?
That's 16% of your daily requirement.
Uh-huh. Because they're saying, I think they were saying something you should have, I don't know what the heck they said, 22 or 72 or something.
Yeah, no, around 24, somewhere around the 24 area. So, you know, getting up there, it's really not hard to do, especially when you're eating either a great bread or great whole grain bread or some whole grain food like Dr. Cracker. And I think, you know, if you look at really the new on-trend diets, they talk about having a very valuable snack is a handful of seeds or nuts, and so in a way we've taken the handful of seeds and already put it on the cracker for you, so that when you go to have a snack, and a lot of people tell me that they really like Dr. Cracker as an afternoon snack when they're getting hungry, and they'll have it like with hummus or with peanut butter, but that's just a great way to get additional protein, fiber, to get that those important minerals and other nutrients that today's diets or today's dietitians really are telling us to eat.
Yeah, the two nuts that I'm, when I say addicted to, like I can't have just one.
Uh-huh.
Two of them, it's pistachio nuts and cashews.
Yeah, the pistachio, especially when you have to shell them yourselves, that's wicked. I mean, boy, it's just like you can take a bowl and all of a sudden you got a bowl of shells.
Cashews, oh yeah,
are pretty dangerous too.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. I just like, it's like, all right, so I'll have another handful. All right, I'll have a little bit more, you know.
Well, our body recognizes good food. And you know, somebody told me that, or I read somewhere that might be a reason why so many people overeat, because they're eating so much nutritionally poor food that their body keeps telling them to eat because there's nothing in the food, their body keeps telling, I'm eating, but I'm not getting anything. You know, it's not like a handful of nuts where you're getting all this, like great nutrient dense food, and that so much food is just empty calories that it's no wonder people overeat.
Yeah, I understand. I know it's sometimes I do that. I don't know. It's like, well, I want something to eat. I don't know what I want. All right.
Yeah.
That's why I grab some of the nuts.
Yeah. Bowl of popcorn is my nemesis.
Oh, the popcorn? With or without all the stuff on it.
Well, I do it in olive oil and then just put salt on it. And usually it's after a long bike ride. I come home and I'm dying for some calories and I'm craving salt because I perspire a lot in riding in Texas. And so it's got to be a bowl of popcorn. It's the first food I usually have after I drink something.
Have you, by the way, how far are you, in terms of Waco, how far are you from Waco?
90 miles.
Oh, okay.
What's
I had
up
gone.
In Waco?
I had gone to, well, it's not in, I guess, yeah, it's in Waco. I went to this place called Homestead Heritage.
Uh-huh.
Have you heard of it? Have you heard of this?
No,
place?
No.
And they make their own cheeses there. And then as I'm eating this, I'm going, wow, I wish I had some of the cheeses from there.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet they'd be good. Like I say, at Farmer's Market, we work a lot with this small dairy called Full Quiver, which is a little bit in Kemp, Texas, south of Dallas. And Mike there, you know, they have 20 cows and they make cheese and raw milk. But his cheeses, they're kind of like a farmstead or a cream cheese, and they're just fantastic. I mean, he has really got the touch.
Mm.
And that is beautiful food with Dr. Cracker.
Now, have you found, like, in experimenting, like, what does not go well on any of these crackers?
You know, really tough meats, things like that. You know, if you try and make a steak sandwich, that wouldn't work. But, you know, my partner swears that with just salami and cheese, they're great. So, to me, Merle, when I'm really looking for something crunchy and crispy, that's when I turn to Dr. Cracker. And like I said, that works well for me with salads. But, no, I haven't found that food that just doesn't go well. Or if it did, I just blocked it out of my mind.
Well, I guess I suppose you could probably, like, make a, chicken salad and put some on there.
Oh, yeah. Chicken salad goes great.
Or if you make chopped liver.
Yeah. I don't see any reason not to.
That would be a good one. Or even egg salad. It's hard. I mean, you can't put scrambled eggs on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
To make an egg salad. But there's all kinds of fabulous ways. Or even, I like the small sizes would be great when you're having, you know, when you got company.
Yep, exactly.
And
you know, they're very convenient.
Yeah, both for dips and hors d'oeuvres, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
That's really great.
You're on the program.
Are you looking to come out with maybe a fifth flavor, so
all
to speak?
The time. Always thinking about it, working on something right now. I don't want to divulge any of my company secrets, but people have suggested something just plain salt on it, so we're looking at that and different herbs. And we do have another line called Culinary Crisps, which are not widely available, but there we've used. They're not organically certified like the four that we talked about. But we have a cherry one. We have an apple one. Then we have one called Hummus Maximus that's got all the ingredients of hummus and some coriander seeds. And so the apple, cherry, the Hummus Maximus, and the fire roasted, where it's got a little bit of jalapeno and some sun-dried tomato.
You know, you got to send these to me so we could talk about
I'll do
these.
That.
You got to do that. Then I got to do a tasting. But I'll also have somebody who, let's say, like, can tolerate spicy to taste.
Yeah.
They're not real spicy, actually.
They taste like the edge of a pizza crust. There's just a little dot of chili on there, so it kind of comes right at the very end. It's not... You know, really great spicy food shouldn't just burn your mouth. It's all about a range of flavors, and the fire-roasted crisps really have that whole range. We even use some sweet potato in them for some extra flavor.
Oh, wow. I really have to taste these things now.
I'll get them to you.
Yeah, I can come up with some ideas. We'll come up with some ideas to use those, because you're doing like a lot of culinary flavors in there.
Exactly.
And you said one of them is cherry. You said
semolina cherry.
Semolina cherry.
With a little bit of fennel background. So yeah.
With fennel in it.
Yeah, a little bit of fennel seed. You know, just got that nice. Fennel aroma. And the one I'm really proud of, though, is the apple crisp, because it was we did a graham cracker before and we discontinued it. But I'm a big fan of Sylvester Graham, the after whom the graham cracker is named. He was kind of like the first food person in the United States who really made food an issue and talked a lot about diet. And the graham cracker today resembles nothing like what he did. But the original graham cracker was yeast raised. It was a bread, and it was a very healthy whole grain bread. And so our apple crisp is really like the graham cracker recipe that he would have approved of.
I'll put
some in the mail to you. They're really good. They're a whole grain biscuit, a great substitute for a cookie.
That's really good. Yeah, I like to. I may have you come on and talk about some recipes with these things.
Sure.
Again.
Sure.
Yeah, because this is it's nice. I like, you know, when I'm able to. When I'm able to sample foods that come out that are more nutritious for you.
Yeah.
I mean, even like, it's funny, like people like, I can go to the supermarket, I don't care what cereal is on sale. It doesn't matter to me. I always go buy, there's one called Nature's Path Organic Cereal.
Yep.
It's just the only one I'll eat. And because I find it's got everything I need to start the morning, you know.
Yep.
And I go, I got my milk. I put in my milk because I got my dairy, you know.
Yep.
I got all the fiber. I got some fruit in there, you know. And I just like, and I don't have to think. I don't have to add sugar. There's enough sugar in there, that, you know, that kind of a thing. So, but so it's nice to have products that along the line that. That are nutritious and tasty. That's the whole thing. I mean, if they taste like crap, it ain't going to do you any good.
They won't sell either. Yeah,
you know, like, oh, I don't want to suffer with this. You know,
I've
but
been doing this for like 6 years now.
Yeah, I really enjoy. I got I have an appointment on Friday with my chiropractor, so I'll let you know what comes of this. It'll be interesting, and this is weird because I don't understand what she does. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me, but she could take away allergies. I don't know how she does it. I don't understand. I really don't care. I don't understand anything she does, and I don't care to understand it as long as it's done. So if she says, you know, if I have, unless I'm really allergic, I'm going to just say, well, you know, remove it. I want to eat this. You know,
well,
it's good. It's good for me.
many people would doubt that or say, no, that's just, you know, woo-woo. But I, you know, used to have fairly aggressive allergies in the spring. We have a lot of pollen in Texas. And I went to this woman who did the same thing, and I am allergy-free, and I've been that way for like 8 years now. I'm the only one in my household that doesn't bother me cedar fever, doesn't bother me in the spring, doesn't bother me in the summer. And I just, you know, got over my doubt and went and did it, and I've been allergy-free since then.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, George, I appreciate your coming on and chatting with us. And as I said, we'll continue with this.
All right, well, I really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Sure. Well, have a great evening. And oh, your website. Got a website?
DrCracker.com. That's DrCracker.com.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Have a good evening.
Okay, you too, Merle. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Yeah, I'm a cracker, you're a cracker. Everybody be a cracker, too. Well, let's see. So, we're now going to go on and continue with, and who am I introducing?
Charmaine.
I'm introducing... We're going to talk about the GLBT Expo.
Correct. How are you?
Oh, just fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This is great.
Yeah, too bad we can't, this would be a product to test out, not test out.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. I wrote down his email because I have allergies too.
This stuff is great. I love when I find things.
Yeah.
What I do when I find products that, you know, that I hear of interesting, then what I wind up doing is, you know, I get in touch and I like to try these out. It's funny, I forgot to even mention it. The reason I even heard about it was that I had gotten a gift from Harry and David.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of the things in it, is crackers. And I'm going,
you're kidding.
Crackers.
Yeah.
No. And I looked at them, crackers. All right, let's see what they. And I tasted it. I go, wow, this is pretty good. Let me check out the company or whatever. You know, otherwise, I wouldn't have heard about it.
Yeah.
So,
oh, that's wonderful.
Know, so that's a smart thing. But let's get to one of the things with the expo is I keep thinking, will there be people coming there to give you samples of food so you don't get drunk?
Yeah, oh, yes. Well, you know, we don't have that much at the show. We have a bar show that's a little bit more extravagant, and it's for the bar, you know, bar and nightclub. It's a trade show, a little different, and boy, that one is, you know.
Oh, I didn't know about that. I mean,
yeah.
I could never do that, to go around tasting. I get drunk on scotch tape.
Oh, I understand. I don't, you know, something no one on the staff drinks when we go to these things, because we would be, you know, under the tables. We wouldn't be able to help anyone. But,
goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But are you going to come to the show this year?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'll be there on Sunday. Well, let's talk about the show.
Sure.
Let's first
I love
tell
to
everybody
that.
What this is all about.
Well, this show, as you know, it's the original GLBT Expo. We're going into year number 18. Can you believe it?
Wow.
And yeah, I know. I've been getting old.
You know, I've been dragging my ass there for 18 years.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? I know. We think about it. We go, oh, my goodness. This year, I've got to tell you, I think it's one of our better years. We have so much that's going on, and I think we have something for everyone. We have entertainment. You know, we have Peppermint and the Glamazons and a whole lineup of, this is a new guy, Kid Akimbo. And these are all, like, you know, really talented people who are on the, you know, the Billboard charts and all of that. And we always put on a wonderful show. And this year we are extending our video lounge to make it really, really impressive. It's going to be probably double the size. And we have a lot of people who are coming, you know, to meet the producers. Some of the stars will be there. I think we have some interesting guests from, like, you know, some Bravo television shows. I don't want to tell for sure because I don't know if they're going to come. But,
right.
Yeah, but no, there's a lot of stuff happening in that section of the show.
So in that area, like if I'm going there, it would be a good place to like to interview.
Oh, absolutely. Oh my goodness, yes. The interviewing. Gosh, there's so many people. I got the lineup just recently, and it's quite large. And as I'm going to give, if you go online too, you could go to the. Hold on, let me just see if I can get it up. It is. Hold on.
I don't think you could get it up.
No, how you think?
No.
Oh, you're so funny, Ro.
Wrong gender. I'm sorry, but.
No. Listen, we have so many different things. I'm going to give you the website. You know, it's originalglbtexpo.com, and it's going up on the site on pretty soon. We're just waiting for the final touches. So
right.
You can always go to Facebook, too, and follow it on Facebook, which is, facebook.com event, and look for Video Lounge. And I think that GLBT Video Lounge, and you'll get some of that information, too. You know what? I'm too old to be on Facebook, but, I try to keep up with it. What can I tell you?
Yeah, now, in the Video Lounge, you'll be able to see, like, you know, by the hour or whatever. Like,
yeah, different hours. They have guests. They're going to have shorts. They're going to have little mini films, interviews with the producers, the directors, some of the stars, and everyone's going to kind of show their new their videos. So it's a fun event. And I have to tell you, the Long Island Film Festival and the Rhode Island Film Festival put it together. But if anyone knows Ryan, he's got a great website. What the heck is his last name? Ryan Wolowski, Ryan Janik. He is fabulous, and he's been putting this together for a long time, and he's great. But he's getting everyone together, as is Steve Flynn, and it's a great group to work with. This is the fourth year that we've done it. So big screen, you know, there's screens, and it's really a cool. It's all enclosed, so it's really, really a cool setting for the Video Lounge. And then the backstage is going with Jeff Brenner, and he produces that. And it sounds like I do nothing, doesn't it? But I really work my tail off for this show. We have, listen, you know what I think is going to be fun this year too, Merle? On Sunday, well, she's going to be there both days of the show, but she's actually doing a seminar. It's only an hour, but it's kind of like crossing over. Her name is Mary Occhino, and she has a Sirius radio program. It's on Sirius. You know, with the other one, they've merged now. But it's called Angels on Call. And she does also a reality show. It's called, on the Sci-Fi channel, it's called Mary Knows Best. And she is a hugely gifted psychic intuitive. She's an author and all of that. But she really makes contact. She's a conduit, kind of, for folks. And what she'll do is she'll go into a crowd and she will get feelings from certain people, and she'll look over in a crowd and say, oh, you're thinking about Merle, what's going on? You know, and or if someone's passed, I mean, she knows. It's an amazing, amazing gift that these people have, and she definitely has it. And she is really loves the gay community, so she's coming on board to do this for us because she's so excited about it. So we'd like to give her a really good crowd.
Appearance, she's going to be in that area where all the entertainment is?
She's going to be in a private, she needs quiet a little bit. So it will be, and you know, it's going to be limited seating, so I want to make sure that, you know, first come, so you get in, and so she does her presentation so that you get the most of her. Last time we had a psychic, we had a standing room only, and she had people crying in the aisles. It was just unbelievable. And Mary is really, really, very well known. So I'm going in. So, you know, I'm excited about it. She'll give a mic to the audience, and she'll also be on one. And she does a lot of interplay. So, you know, for those of you who are interested in, you know, finding out more about the other side, I think that you should you know, come and give her a shot on Sunday. But she will be, we're giving her a place in the show so you can go and visit her. And I'm not quite sure what she's doing in her area, but I know that it'll be very rewarding just to even meet her. She's just a lovely, lovely gal.
So, in other words, there'll be a, like, what I call like a tented kind of thing, like what they do sort of with the
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure if she's tenting, but I know in the conference room she's going to have, you know, the doors will be closed and there won't be the noise from the show.
In other words, you have to walk away from the main part of the show.
Right,
to
it's
come
just,
into
you know,
it.
You, and you go, you get back in, it's no big deal. You just, you know, walk
right.
yourself over.
Oh, yeah, I just realized that all the conference rooms that are
yeah,
over there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I've gone to many other things there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So,
yeah.
you know, but I'll have a press pass. So I'm,
yes, so she'll be doing
so
it, so that'll
it.
Be great. And, I, you know, interesting, too, In the lounge area, I mean, in the seminar area, we also have some really cool seminars going on, and they're being sponsored by the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. And there's some panel discussions, which I think people will be very interested in both days. And also there's a special meet and greet, which is a wine tasting kind of for professionals to schmooze. You know, there will be a lot of people from the gay community. And the proceeds for that are going to go directly to the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber to support them. But whoever goes to that, that's a separate thing. But whoever goes to that, of course, would get into our show on a complimentary basis. So we really want to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's really cool. Matt has limited seating in there, too. But there's going to be someone, I don't know, are you a wine snob? Are you familiar with wines?
Well, I can do a tasting.
Yeah.
I'm not a drinker,
mm-hmm.
but I've done, like, tastings because,
mm-hmm.
you know, just being the food kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But not,
well,
yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, we're going to have a tasting, and a sommelier is going to be there and kind of telling you what to look for in wines. And, then, you know, there's going to be wine, and, of course, we'll have some snacks there, too. We don't want anyone getting drunk. But it's a kind of a networking event, and if you're interested in that, you could just go up on either our website or their website, the NGLCCNY.
Right.
That's a great organization. It really is pulling together a lot of corporate and local GLBT-owned businesses together. And so it's really wonderful. It's about time New York had a branch. You know, it's been a while. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff going on. We have your basic educational seminar, dare I say that, and we have the 2 days of nightlife, which is the stage, and then we have the video lounge. And then, of course, we have a lot of interesting exhibits this year, so I'm excited about it. And you know, 18 years is a good luck. I don't, you know.
Any new kids on the block as far as exhibits coming in?
We have a huge. The travel area is expanded. I'm trying to think. We have a couple of radio stations there. We also have people who are doing. You know, spas, I think they're bringing in their hot tubs, and so they'll be...
Really?
Yeah. There's really a whole...
They're going to bring in their hot tubs?
Yeah. It's going to be a pretty big show this year, so we're excited.
Wow.
And, you know who's going to be there, too?
Ooh.
If anyone's interested in pet adoption, we have the North Shore folks, the North Shore Animal League coming in.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, cool.
Yeah, that's a huge, they're going to have a huge presence, and they're going to be actually, and they're very, very funny. I mean, you cannot get an animal from them unless you pass, you know, polygraph, I think. They're really, very strict, but they're wonderful. The animals are adorable, and they take you through a bus thing, and, you know, and you can get to see, and it's just, it's very, very cute. And the animals are adopted, and right from the show. So that's kind of fun this year.
In terms of space, I mean, like, is it the same area?
Yeah, we generally have about 300 to 350, you know, booths. Some exhibitors take more space, others not. But I think that this year we have, you know, we have the wedding area, a lot of interesting folks in there. And we have some things that are being sold. We have some jewelry, which is always nice. And it's all geared towards the GLBT community. We have folks who are doing samplings. We have some spirits, some wines, you know, some beers, a couple of different companies. So, we, of course, we have the rodeo. What would our show be without the the rodeo? Have you ever ridden that bull?
No, no way.
one of these days I'm going to get on it. No, I know.
My chiropractor would have a fit.
Oh, no, 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 no. Yeah, well, I don't know about you, but I'm getting too old to do it. I should have done it 18 years ago when you started out. No, but it's really, I encourage everyone to call into the office, and if they call in and they say they've listened to you on the radio, all they have to say is, you know, I'm calling in from Merle's Worlds, and we'll give them a complimentary ticket.
And well, that's great.
You want me to give the number?
Yes, sure.
Okay, they can call 800.
Mm-hmm.
243-9774.
Okay. And it's March, it's the
March
12th, 12th and the 13th.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, yeah. It's
yeah,
March
well,
12th
please.
And 13th, and Saturday we've changed our hours. We're now starting at noon, so it's 12 to 7 on Saturday and 12 to 6 on Sunday.
Okay. In terms of changing it, did you?
We had earlier start just an hour earlier, but we found that most folks just came in at 12 anyway, so we're going to do that.
Okay. Yeah, I like to get there just, you know, even a little before.
Yeah.
Get downstairs and you know, and check everything out before I start.
Well, you're going to enter this year, and there's a lovely lady. I don't know if it's an orchestra or whatever, a woman doing the piano, serenading you as you come in. And, you know, we're having the casinos there in Atlantic City and the one from Connecticut, Mohegan Sun. And, you know, they always do great giveaways and fun stuff. So it's going to be a really, really, really fun show. This, again, very colorful, very fun, very, you know, just comfortable. People are networking. And it's so nice for me to see because, believe it or not, I recognize people from year to year. And they always come over and say hello, and so it's nice. It's almost like a big, giant 20,000 people family, you know?
Yeah.
It's true. I just know so many. After 18 years, I've seen people grow up. I've seen people go from the bar scene, get married, get kids, have children, you know, and now their kids are getting older. So it's really, it's interesting to see. It's, you know, watching like your family grow.
Well, one of the things that will be great for, I mean, the people who, like, who live in Connecticut coming in and for the anything with the weddings, at least they can get married in Connecticut.
Yes, and, you know, we also have we have some exhibitors from Connecticut, I do believe, and we also have the Long Island Railroad and the Metro North Railroad who are partnering with us. So you can get a weekend pass if you go up on their website, and we're at all the train stations. We have you know these big posters and stuff, but they are going to do a new it's called the a rail and show discount getaway package. So if somebody has to come in on rail, they should just go to the MTA and check it out, mta.com.info. So it's www.mta.info. So we are up there with the car show and, you know, the Smithsonian package. So we're very excited about that this year. And they are great. And the getaway package is really fun. So it's a combo ticket and ride on the train. So if you're coming in from Long Island especially and from wherever it starts in Connecticut, I think it starts in Metro in Connecticut, goes all the way into the city. So you can take the ride and come to the show.
That's great.
Yeah,
great
it
idea.
Is great. Yeah, so we're doing that. And if they want to stay at the stay in New York, we have the host hotels are all over the place. They're the Four Points by Sheraton. We have three locations, so They could just go up online and check that out. There's one in Soho. There's one in Chelsea. There's one at Times Square. And will they
shuttle you over?
Well, what they do is they give you a discounted rate if you say that you're with the GLBT Expo. So if people are staying.
Oh, no, I'm saying if you're staying there, will they shuttle you?
No, it's
do they
too
have
hard
a bus?
because we don't know how many people are going to take rooms, and it's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, but they are definitely giving discounts, so.
For the hotel stay.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And they're nice hotels. We usually stay. They're little boutique-y hotels. They have all the gadgets, which I don't know how to work, and, you know, the nice fluffy beds and all that stuff. You know, I know I sound, but I actually had to hire, this is very funny for all of you who are probably savvy, and I'm not, we actually had to hire a social media person for this, you know, for our shows. And she's all of 19, and boy, does she know her stuff. I mean, do you do that? Do you do the social media thing?
No.
No?
Oh, no. I'm not into Twitter and all that other
stuff.
I just can't, Steve, my webmaster.
Yeah.
He'll tell. I mean, as it is, getting me to do a radio show and the blogs took a while. And, oh,
yeah.
No. Marla, listen, you could do it. You could, you know. But, you know, I know I have a Twitter thing and a Facebook thing, and I just don't even bother with it because I don't know. What am I putting? Which especially I find with having a blog, I'm an open book. Now, I don't blog about what I do every day because it's like there's – it's boring. I don't need to tell you what I do every day. There's nothing that comes up. If I do something that makes a difference, if there's something to tell you about, I may blog it, you know.
Oh, sure.
But otherwise, you know, I mean, I have a whole thing now with the sanitation in New York City that I'm having.
Are you having a war with them?
Oh, yeah, I have a war with them. And I just said, the heck with it. So it's coming out in tomorrow's newspaper instead.
In Queens?
And the Queens Times.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, and then I'm going to take that. Then I put that up on a publication called American Chronicle that goes to 22 publications.
Wow, that's fabulous. That's fabulous.
You know, and part of it, one of the things I started off saying something like, you know, they kicked they got rid of the guy in Egypt. Why can't we get rid of our leader?
Yeah, right.
Because he could just extend
his years.
I mean, yeah, it's totally ridiculous. I mean, I had sitting there with a week's worth of garbage sitting out there in front, and it was an excuse. And I even called my representative, called the council, my city council person. And I mean, I'm not saying they didn't do anything. They didn't get the job done. They didn't do what they should have done.
Well,
you know, and then
I don't know
get
how
back
they
to me. You know?
It amazes me in New York and how they get anything done. It's so enormous. I'm up here in the sticks in Connecticut, and I think, oh, my God, it snows, and it's a foot of snow. How are they ever going to, you know, pick up our trash or what have you? But it's like it's so much different. The city is just unbelievable. I just love it. Now, do you live in Manhattan or do you live in Brooklyn?
No, I live in Queens.
You do live in Queens.
Yes, which is one of the forgotten boroughs. Or as I say, the line, people ask me if I'm from Queens, and I say, no, my folks are straight.
Isn't that the gateway to Long Island?
Yes,
Queens,
it is.
Yes. Yes, I know Queens very well. There was a great restaurant there. Gosh, it was over by where they do the tennis thing, the Open. New York, a fabulous Italian.
Where they do it now or where they used to do it?
Where they used, this is like going back 20 years, so it's where they used to do it.
Oh, you mean, because it used to be in Forest Hills.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah.
That's now, where it was?
Yeah. Great Italian restaurant. And, you know, a lot of exciting. You know, New York, no matter where you go in the city, it's just wonderful. It has its own little personality, no matter what street you're on, in either Manhattan or Brooklyn or Queens, anywhere. It's to me, I've been going to the city for a long, and it just every time I walk down and walk down a different street, it's just a new and exciting area. There's no place like New York.
Yeah, and when you come in, you're coming in and you're in Manhattan.
Well, yeah,
see,
but yeah.
But that's the whole thing. This is what Bloomberg did.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to make sure Manhattan looked good.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who are coming to visit, who are spending money, who are tourists, don't necessarily go to the other boroughs.
Oh, that's a shame. They don't know what they're missing.
Of course they don't. I mean, I've been writing articles, you know, for a while about, and it's not come to the other boroughs because we have something nice. Come to the other boroughs because you're not going to find it in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go to a zoo.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go to the zoo? Yeah, there's zoos in most of the boroughs. But
mm-hmm.
you want to go to the zoo, you got to go to the Bronx.
Of course.
You want to go to botanical gardens? Yes, they have
mm-hmm.
some in each of the boroughs.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't go to the Bronx Botanical Gardens, you're
mm-hmm.
missing what
yes.
botanical garden is like. So it's that kind of a thing. You want to see when it comes to an aquarium? I'm sorry,
mm-hmm.
the aquarium's located in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
There ain't one in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Or if you want to, you know, it's like the Museum of the Moving Image. You into movies,
mm-hmm.
it's not in Manhattan. It's in Astoria. It's in Queens. You know, so it's that kind of a thing that, and they don't push that. In terms of tourism, he's so silly about not wanting to, you know, because, and the problem is, like, especially if you're in Manhattan and you see, let's say, okay, you know what? I've never been to the Central Park Zoo. Have you?
Yes.
I have no idea how big it is.
It's not terribly large, but it, you know what it is? It's just the entrance is the thing that gets you. You walk down this beautiful wide avenue, and you know there are nannies with their kids and children running. It's very, very she, and you look up and you see over the entrance. There's this huge bronze clock, and they big animals come out every hour, I think, and it's like a big giant German clock. And then you go into the zoo, and it's pretty nice. They have, you know, I think they have tigers and monkeys, and you know they have seals. And it's been a while; I haven't been in a couple of years. But I love Central Park. I have to tell you, I walk down the Central Park. I used to jog there when I was younger, and that's so large, and it's, again, every place you look, there's a new something to look at, you know, where they have the fountain with the Peter Pan fountain, and
right.
You know, I mean, it's just, and then they have the beautiful pond with the restaurant and the kids with their little boats, and you can get in a rowboat and do it. I mean, it really has everything. New York has everything. And Prospect Park, too, is beautiful. I mean, they're all beautiful.
I live across the street from Forest Park.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people have no idea.
No.
What they got? There's a full golf, 18-hole golf, tennis courts.
Wow.
There's a band shell. There's an old carousel. And then there's like fields. There's, and it's horseback riding.
Wow.
I mean, it's like, and people, like, don't even think about it, you know. Yeah, it's, you know, they just, it's in Queens. Cause
yeah.
It's amazing on the facilities. And, of course, there's the typical things of, you know, places to picnic and stuff. There's one particular spot there that everybody goes to pose for their weddings.
Oh, how nice.
One spot, so everybody's posing for weddings all the time. But it's the kind of thing, that's the whole thing, is that these are the things that are not pushed, and these are the things that could be appreciated.
Well, you know, don't you have like a first selectman or a chamber of commerce in Queens that would do
Yeah,
this?
We do, and I don't know, like, yeah, they do what they can, but I see... And I have to call, it's not a problem, but I had put this out. I had said to them, what they need to do is they need to have press trips.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what a great idea.
They need to have press, and the best part about it, if they have a press trip, when people are coming in by plane, they're there. They're in Queens.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
no, true.
You know, and that's what they need to do. But it's, you know, they do things. They're saying what's happening or things like that. But, you know, then and I've suggested it. And then it's like, it doesn't matter. They want to do their own thing. And I just shrug on my shoulders and take hearing of my New York Sharks.
You know what? You are a native New Yorker, though, so you've got it in your heart.
Yeah, I do. I did live in Manhattan a couple of years or whatever, and it was I didn't really like it. I didn't appreciate living in Manhattan.
Yeah, Queens is more like a small city flavor. It's a city unto itself. Most of the boroughs are. And I've been to Queens a number of times because we have some clients out there, but and I know everybody thinks of Rikers Island and Queens, and it's kind of ominous when you drive by them as the entrance there. It's pretty cool actually. But that what part of Queens is that in the Rikers Island? Is that like
that's not Queens at all?
That's not Queens?
No.
You have to go to Queens to get there, don't you though?
You know, it's funny when you say that because going to Rikers Island and I'm living in Queens, it's and I'm trying to think it's like I think it's like I'm going to the Bronx.
Oh, really?
No. I'm taking the Grand Central Parkway. I think I'm going over the Triborough Bridge.
Well, no, really, no.
Triborough Bridge. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, anyway.
We've passed it quite a bit, and on our way to see. And I'm pretty sure the client. Well, see now you told me something I did not.
I think
know.
It's owned by. I think it's a Manhattan thing. It's a Manhattan owned thing, as opposed to.
Really.
The Bronx or something.
Well, maybe
I think
some of
Manhattan.
Your. I don't know. Maybe I don't know now. Now you've got me wondering. We'll have to look it up.
Oh, it's yeah. It's no. We don't got an island. We don't got a Rikers Island. No.
No Rikers Island. No. Okay.
Yeah. No.
Well, listen, I have loved chatting with you as always. I have to get going here, but please have everyone call me, and I'd love to just see everyone at the show this year.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, as I said, I'll be there.
It's a wonderful place to schmooze and just to see everybody, see what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But have them call if they want to, and they have to say, heard you on Merle's.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone knows, you can call me and tell me where Rikers Island is, too, because I swore it was in Queens. Yeah. But would you come over to me this year and say hello?
I certainly will.
Okay, because I would love to see you.
Okay.
And, so come to the video lounge. Come to see Mary. She's going to be really cool.
I'll probably hang for the day, I'm sure.
Yeah, good. What day are you coming? Do you know?
I'll be there Sunday because that's when the Sharks can get there.
Good. All righty.
All right.
Say hi to everybody, and I'm going to look for your article tomorrow. On the garbage thing.
And the gay expo is in there.
Oh well, that's good. Just don't put us next to each other.
I did the bad news and good news, and the good news was
great.
The gay expo.
I love that. That's great. Okay, Merle, my dear. I will talk to you real soon.
Sure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
It's going to be pretty cool. I'm looking forward to going to the expo. Now we're going, actually, man, I'm thirsty from talking, and I don't have time to get up and get my my fresh glass of lemonade. Oh, Bobby, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. I wanted to have the lemonade. The first thing I want. Oh, let me introduce yourself before we start chatting.
Okay, my name is Bobby Bell. I'm with Bell's Farm to Market in McAllen, Texas. We're gift fruit shippers.
Okay. Well, before I get into that thing, I want to talk about the particular items that you have that you specialize in. I mean, you know, like it's a farmer's market kind of thing, so there's more than what we're going to talk about. But I want to kind of get into the things that I had sampled, tried, and whatever. One of which, when I made the lemonade, I used this thing, a ponderosa lemon. Please tell my audience what it is and how you would describe it.
Well, it's kind of like a regular lemon on steroids. It's a great big lemon, probably weigh a pound, pound and a quarter a piece, a lot of them, and very, very thick skin, lots of seeds, and very, very tart. It's excellent pie lemon to make great lemon pies.
Oh, in other words, it wasn't one that I should have made juice out of, to make lemonade.
No. It makes excellent lemonade.
Oh, okay.
And also it makes the peel is an excellent product for making different things where you need lemon zest.
Yes, that's the second thing I did. Not the first thing I did. The first thing I did is I zested it. I used microplane, I guess they call them. Yeah. And I zested it, and then I let it all, like, dry out to dry, and then I put it, like, in a little plastic bag, and it's sitting in my refrigerator for when I need lemon zest.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I did is I scooped out the lemon part using as – I got to explain to people that you can probably – make a mistake thinking it might be a grapefruit.
Yes, we have had that trick pulled on some of our customers. One will come in and want to send one to a friend as a grapefruit, and they'll get to it and it not anything like a grapefruit.
No.
but similar in looks.
Yeah, so what I wound up doing is I use a grapefruit spoon and scooped out and then I took it and then I put it in a like a blender to pulverize it to use for the and put it aside, put the juices. I make some one of them makes a lot of lemon juice, and you have to look at it and think about, well, you don't need that much of the lemon juice to make the lemonade. You don't want a lot.
Yeah, it takes so much sugar to sweeten it up.
Yes, that's true. Because I looked at that, and I went, let's see, to make this lemonade, all the sugar content that I'm having ain't gonna, you know. But it's okay. I mean, it's not like I'm gonna have. I'm sure it's better to have the lemonade with the amount of sugar than to have soda. With the fructose or whatever, the corn syrup in it.
Exactly.
You're still better off. So what I haven't done, I really haven't done enough experimenting. I want to go to the next kind of – and I wanted to ask you, how did these things come up? Was this a – did somebody cross a lemon and a grapefruit to make for these things or what?
Well, it's a grafted tree. They found that fruit, and what they do here in the Rio Grande Valley is they grow it on a sour orange rootstock, and whenever it comes up, well, then they graft this ponderosa lemon onto it. So it's a grafted tree, and you just can't plant the seed and grow one.
Oh, okay. And this is, in other words, you're not going to find this in any place but Texas.
No, I think it. You might find that in Florida also, where they also produce citrus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I've never seen
and
that.
It's a tree that produces fruit year-round, basically, and it never does get very big because it's always loaded down with fruit. It is very prolific.
Wow. So let's get to the other one, the Meyer lemon, and explain what that is and how that differs from your regular lemon.
Well, the Meyer lemon is a real sweet lemon. It is very, very thin skin. It's not a good shipper because of the fact it is so thin skin and it is full of juice. But it has a different flavor. Lots of people really savor that flavor of the Meyer lemon for different dishes and drinks and what have you. And it is also a very prolific lemon. And it's a regular size. It's not a super big lemon.
And it almost looks like an orange.
Yes, we, in fact, here now, since you were here, the lemons have really gotten yellow now, and we've had a lot of people, had one here yesterday, came back in the store, and he said, my wife told me to get lemons, and I got these out to the car, and she says, I bought oranges. And so they look very, very similar.
Yeah.
So.
Now, how does that differ in terms of the zest itself? Would it be completely different? I don't say flavor or tartness or something than the Ponderosa.
Yes, yes, it's a completely different flavor. It's a lot sweeter lemon. A lot of people actually just eat this lemon, skin and all. They'll cut it up and eat the skin and all.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to do that. I didn't use them up yet.
Yeah, well, you ought to try that because I'm not particularly a person of the to eat the skin because of the oil in it, but some people do that, and it imparts a different flavor.
So, in other words, because I always understand that when it comes to any citrus, to not eat, I guess what you call like the white part.
No, the white part is a very nutritious part of the fruit, and you try and leave on all the white parts you can whenever you're peeling it. Is what a very health conscious person would try and do.
So you mean that when I say the white part, meaning that where the once past the zest.
Yes.
Where the skin that's white, that's where I understand that it's too tart to use. No, but not with this.
What I'm talking about is the little white membrane type stuff. It's between fruit and the skin itself.
Okay.
And that's what a lot of people claim that is the real nutritious part of all the citrus.
So when you say that the people are eating the whole Meyer lemon, they're not like it's not so disgustingly tart that you're going to go.
No,
oh,
no, it is not. It's a sweet lemon, like I said earlier.
Wow.
It's a real sweet lemon, and it's not. Very tart. It's on the bottom end of the scale for tartness compared to the Ponderosa lemon. Is at
oh,
the top.
Yeah. And even compared
and
to a regular
this,
lemon.
The Meyer lemon is in the bottom, and then the regular lemon, which is called a Eureka lemon, is in the middle.
Okay. I'm going to do that. Just take a bite into the whole thing and see. Because one of the things that I find in terms of lemons, it's like, and I call it's like a waste of, it's like most of the time you're taking a lemon, you're squeezing it, and there's still stuff left over. I mean, it's like the pulp.
Yes, uh-huh.
And it's like, well, what do you do? No one does anything except squeeze a lemon. And do you lose out by not having the pulp?
Well, I don't know about the. I don't think the pulp would have a lot of nutrition in it, if that's what you're referring to, because the pulp is really just kind of the membrane that holds the juice all together.
Oh, okay.
And that's the cell that it is in, the liquid.
Oh, okay.
But it does have a, I'm sure it would probably impart a little bit of a different flavor to a drink or what you were using it for if you put the pulp in there.
One of the things that I'm going to try is to take the Meyer. Oh, I did this once. I took, that's the Meyer lemon that you sent me home with. I took the Meyer lemon and I squeezed out the juice and I mixed it with sugar and sake and let it hang for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Made a really good limoncello.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it came out really good. It's a, for like a, I don't know if you ever had limoncello. It's a liqueur from Italy, and it's basically they're using, and I guess this is what I think was, this is something we might have discussed. It's like the lemons that they have in Italy are these sweet lemons.
Uh huh.
And I guess it sort of compares to the Meyer lemon. Although I don't know if theirs are even sweeter. They kind of look like, it reminds me of if you took the size of a Meyer lemon and crossed it, it's still even larger. It's like with the Ponderosa one, with that kind of a skin, yeah. But anyway, so now we got people don't expect things like oranges and grapefruits in Texas. They always think California and Florida. So how is it just this? Is it particular areas of Texas?
Yes, it is a very small area down here in the very southern tip of Texas, in the Rio Grande Valley, that has this world-class grapefruit, red grapefruit. And once they've had that red grapefruit, they will want to get some more.
So are they called ruby reds or just red?
They're called Rio Star is the appropriate name for them. And, the Rio Star, they're able to pack. We're able to pack two different kinds of red grapefruit in the Rio Star, which is the Rio Red and the Star Ruby. Either one of those two types of real bloody red fruit can be in the box.
Will one taste different from the other?
No, they're both very similar. Both very similar. And they're just all just real sweet and juicy. It's an outstanding grapefruit.
And how about in terms of the oranges? Do you think the flavor, the taste of the oranges differ from, let's say, again, with California or Florida? Or
Yes. We get calls all the time of people that receive some of our oranges and say that that's the best orange they ever ate. And I'm sure that the other states also have them whenever they get tree ripened, and they probably get good also. But we have a very good orange. We have
what would it characterize as? Yeah.
The oranges.
Yeah.
I know,
like Florida, they have it's navel, it's this, it's whatever. What would you call those?
Well, we start shipping a Mars orange. It's called an early orange is what it's called in the commercial world. And we start with that and also the navel orange we have. And then when we get those finished, well, then we start with a pineapple orange, which is our mid-season orange. And we have a couple of those. We have the pineapple and we have the Joppa orange. And Then after the Jaffa is finished and the pineapple, well, then we go to the Valencia orange, which is our late season orange.
And will each of the oranges have a different flavor?
Yes.
Well, not flavor, I mean.
Each season is, they have a little different flavor. They sure do. The early season orange that we're just finishing up with right now are just like eating yellow syrup. They're just really, really sweet now and making wonderful juice. And the pineapple are a little bit seedier orange. They have a few more seeds than the Mars. And then the Valencia is a real, if you will, kind of a, really an orange-flavored orange. To me, it's probably one of our best oranges, the Valencia, the late-season orange. But our problem is we don't have too many here in the valley.
Right.
They're pretty short. But whenever they're getting sweet, they make the best juice in the world. They really make a good juice. In fact, it's been said that a lot of our Valencia juice goes to some of the other states to help with their juice.
Oh, really?
Yes, uh-huh, for flavor purposes.
What about the zest of them, of these oranges? Do they all taste different, too?
Well, I would say that the Valencia orange has the most zest of any of them because it doesn't lose its orange flavor. The others, the pineapple and the Mars, when they get very ripe, they just kind of lose their orange flavor, and it's just like real, real sweet yellow orange juice.
And how about the early one? That's the one I have, right?
Yes. Well, I think I gave you the navel, didn't I?
I'm not sure. I got to take a look. I'm not sure.
Yeah, let's see here.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the navel orange that I
sent. Oh, okay.
You. Yeah, it was the navel.
And if you're going to make, like, if I wanted to make, like, chocolate-covered orange peels,
uh-huh,
which would they all be okay or not okay? Would there be one that you'd say, oh, use this particular orange for?
I would say that probably if you were going to do that, probably the Mars or the navel orange would be good for orange peel because they generally have a little bit thicker skin. The mm-hmm. The Valencia orange, after it's been harvested for a while, the skin starts to dry, and it's
right.
A little bit on the tough side.
So, in other words, what I should do, now, with this, in terms of, have you ever made chocolate-covered orange peels with this?
No, I have not.
Oh, okay. Because I'm wondering, when you're doing the peel, are you peeling it just enough and not getting that white?
Uh-huh.
You don't
no,
want
I,
the white.
I never have done
right?
that, Merle. I don't know.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll experiment. I'll experiment with that one. One of the things, I love chocolate-covered orange peels.
Uh-huh.
But
I
don't
never
know.
Have
like,
tried that.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that I also want to get to, and I have to tell you, wasn't it yesterday, as I'm slicing up the onion, that I
uh-huh.
suddenly realized, wait a second, I'm not getting any tears.
No tears, huh?
No tears. And I'm going, wow. Now, it started off, and I have to explain to you something. I'm not an onion eater. Not I hate them. I just don't like them. They don't like me and whatever. And I said, I got to try these. And so I tried them, like I sliced it, then I'm sautéed, and I had some peppers, and I was whatever. And I'm tasting the onions. I'm going, wow, these are sweet. These are really good. I'm hooked. I haven't had them raw yet. Tonight I'm going to have them raw in a salad
because
uh-huh. I want to see how that does that. So I want you to talk about these onions. What are they?
Well, they're
how is it different from a regular onion?
The sweet fresh onion It all started from the Texas 1015 onion, and they've continued with it and bred new seed and what have you, and produced onions that are just all called a bunch of super sweet onions now. And they're just very, very mild and hardly have any pungency whatsoever. And they're just beginning to come in out of Mexico now. We'll be harvesting Mexican onions probably for another 3 weeks. And then we will start with our Texas crop here in the Rio Grande Valley.
Okay, well, we don't want to mix this up when you say from Mexico with ones that are called Spanish onions, right?
No, it's not the same as a Spanish onion. No,
okay. I don't want people to think because
these,
it's from Mexico that they're, you know, Spanish onions.
These will all generally have a little sticker on them, say sweet onion.
And how does it compare, or have you, I mean, compared to what people know as a Vidalia onion?
Well, I would say that it is as good or a better onion than the Vidalia onion. Generally, our onions here are a lot larger onion and not a real, real flat onion. The Vidalia onion is generally a real flat onion and not too big.
Oh, that's true. Yes, it is a flat onion. Now that I think about it.
And whenever you have a flat onion, where you have a lot of wasted onion, when you cut the top off of it, you cut it all the way across. Well, ours are a little more pointed, if you will, and so you don't waste quite as much meat with them when you are trimming them, cutting them ready to use. But we have a very good onion. Early on, when the Vidalia and the Texas 1015 started becoming very popular, they had some contest around for mildness, and I think in most cases the Texas onion came in on top. But
we have a real disadvantage.
And with Vidalia, and that we're not able to store them like they are. They can put that onion in a storage facility and keep them and have onions for 6 or 8 months out of the year, where we can't do that here because of the heat that we have and the winds.
Right. Now, also there's one other particular item which I didn't get, but you know it wasn't at this time, that you of avocados.
Yes, that's
that
right. We grow
like, that are more like Haas avocados than I believe, right?
Well, the Haas avocado is a regular avocado you get at the grocery store most of the time. Ours are called Lulu avocados, and it's a lot larger avocado. And it is a little bit sweeter eating avocado.
Are they smooth skins or?
Yes, they are basically a smooth skin.
Okay,
yes.
So that's the look of the smooth skin ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh huh. Yeah, they have an avocado that's a lot like that out of Florida. But they are a very good avocado. They're a good keeper. They last. They don't go bad so fast. And a lot of people that are down here for the wintertime, they really enjoy these avocados. This year, unfortunately, we had a freeze the prior year in January, and so there was very, very few of these avocados available. And so we're hoping that next season, which will be starting in November, we'll have a good supply of the Lulu avocado.
Now, you also, what's the website so people can order gifts? Gift for themselves even. What's the website to go to?
Our website is www.bellsfarm.com. BellsFarm.com.
Okay, I want to make sure I get that in before the next caller calls in. I got so much more for us to chat about. I may wind up having you on another show. I hope you don't mind because
of course not.
Because there's more. I want to get into all the other stuff that you carry, plus the line that you have of things that are made, get in the jar that you can get.
Oh yes, our jams, our jellies, and our dressings.
I want to get into that and talking about are the products coming from you? In other words, of who's making it?
Of who's making them? No, we have a company that makes a lot of those products for us. We do not make them here.
But are you providing? Let's say there's something that has onions in it. Are you providing your onions? No.
No, I am not.
Oh, okay.
I am not.
So I don't have to do a whole show on that.
No.
Okay. Well, I'm urge people to go to the website and I'm not going to compare it to any of the other places that you can get fruits and whatever, but what I'm going to say to people who listen to the show, it's a cut above any of the places you can get through a catalog, because you just because the flavors are different. It's not your typical whatever, typical fruits. And I'm sure people will be very happy with getting these as a gift. So, and with that, I'm going to be talking about a restaurant now. Man, I'm going to be so hungry when I'm done.
Yeah,
I bet. I appreciate you calling in and telling us about this. And as I said, I may get back to you because, I have another a caller, and I want to because I want to be able to talk about that. It's not just the fruits I mentioned or what I mentioned that's there. But I guess if you go to the website, you can see that there are other things other than what that you could buy than just the citrus fruit and the avocados and the onions.
We just finished our tomatoes too, our vine ripe tomatoes, but we've finished those now.
Okay. Well, again, thanks a whole bunch for calling, Bobby, and have a great evening. And after I finish with the show, I'm going into the kitchen.
Okay. Well, real good, Merle. Thank you.
Time. You're welcome. Bye.
I'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Okie doke. Bye. Oh, man. I'll tell you. Yeah. Okay. Now, if that wasn't going to get me hungry talking about that, this is going to get me even hungrier talking about 15th Street Fisheries. And I have, oh, God. I got Mark Dubin here from 15th Street Fisheries here on the line. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
Fantastic. Oh, it sounds like you're getting hungry, huh?
Oh, man, I'm telling you. And the thing is, we were just discussing things having to do with some fruit.
Yeah.
So I haven't even dealt with anything dealing with the food part,
Well, I'm gonna do my best to try to get you as hungry as possible.
Well, the first thing I want to get into, and now we're back. Now we're from Texas. Now we're going to Fort Lauderdale, Florida again.
Fantastic.
And so the first thing I want to get into is what is it like to have? What is the advantage of having? The restaurant that's at a marina.
Well, the history of the 15th Street Fisheries is a pretty fantastic one, and historical as well. You know, the people who actually own the land have owned this land since about 1968. And before that, the land actually where the marina and the restaurant sits was a secret kind of Air Force naval base that they used to do missions with, you know, experimental stuff with missiles and stuff and torpedoes in the water, because back then in South Florida, this place, you know, 1947, there wasn't a lot going around in Fort Lauderdale. So the marina actually was bought and opened up, I think, in 1968, if I'm not mistaken. And it was one of the first marinas in Broward County. And in 1978, the owners of the marina, Mr. Bob Cox, had decided to build this restaurant for a nationally renowned hospitality professor at Florida National Institute. And his name was Michael Hurst. And so in 78, they actually built the restaurant for him. And, you know, we've been around for 33 years. So it's interesting to be not only a restaurant on the water, but to actually have a lot of traffic and business going on outside. Some of the other restaurants that are on the water in South Florida have wonderful views, but, you know, you might see a boat or two that go by. Here, because we're one of the last marinas before you actually go out into the ocean, I mean, we just got a ton of traffic. So it's real fun to sit outside on the dock and have something to eat and just watch all types of boats and cruise ships go by.
And I understand, or we understand, there's certain fish that hang around your particular restaurant.
You know, years ago, what would happen is we didn't necessarily have nets up or anything, and the guests who would be eating, you know, the kids would throw some food into the water, or you throw some scraps into the water, and the fish would go. Well, over the years, now these huge, you know, 10, 15-foot tarpon have this instinctual habit to hang around the restaurant during operating hours. And so we don't keep them enclosed. They're completely wild. But from the hours of about 11 a.m., till 10 p.m., huge schools of all different varieties of fish swim around and hang around waiting to get fed. And we encourage people to feed the fish, and they jump out of the water. And, you know, sometimes you can see manatees. Sometimes you'll see the stingrays floating around. And we got
really?
Hang out. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And a few years back, we actually built an underwater lighting truss, so that when the sun goes down, we can actually turn the lights on, and then the lights shine up, and you can see all the fish. The amazing thing is that after 10 p.m. when the restaurant closes, the fish go somewhere else. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. Sometimes I'll be at the restaurant till, you know, 12:30, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'll go downstairs, and there'll be no fish there whatsoever. But come 11:30 the next day, I mean, there's just schools of them.
Wow. They send out invitations.
I think so. It's amazing, you know, and it's instinctual now, you know, because, you know, the little fishies' parents did it, and their parents did it, and the parents of those fishies did it, and so it's just habit to them now. Everybody knows in the Intercoastal and the Atlantic Ocean, if you want to get a free meal, come to the 15th Street Fisheries.
Wow. Now, you have, actually, you got sort of like, two restaurants there, right?
We actually consider it two dining rooms, although, sure, you could consider it two restaurants. We have a downstairs, which is our dockside cafe. And what we like in that, too, is a little bit kind of like a lazy South Florida Jimmy Buffett-style restaurant, where you're going to find yourself having amazing pub food, fish and chips, hamburgers, fried fish sandwiches, shrimp, all that kind of stuff. And you can hang out, and it's inexpensive fare, and the service is relaxed. Everybody's having a great time, and it's just a little bit more of that kind of atmosphere. Upstairs, our dining room opens at 5 p.m., And it's a little bit more, you know, for the lack of a better term, kind of a complete dining experience. We have linen on the tables. The food is a little bit more refined as far as, you know, instead of fish and chips, like we'll have like a grilled mahi-mahi with a sweet plantain mashed potatoes and a citrus nage served with a fresh green bean almondine. It's a little bit of a different type of dining experience. And it depends, because we're in South Florida, so it depends. You know, some of our guests want to relax and just, you know, veg out at the table with a couple of beers. And some of our guests want a complete dining experience with maybe their wife or birthday, anniversary, graduation. And they come upstairs. We have an award-winning wine list that for about 11 years in a row from the Wine Spectator. And, you know, so it's just two different, we get the best of both worlds here.
That's great. Now, if I go into, like, I'll try to go into remembering what I ate, because I did a tasting. Are you familiar? Can we do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Our chef is, our chef's amazing. You know, what we've really tried to do over the past couple of years is really be at the forefront of a lot of the different food movements. One of the greatest thing about being here is that all of us are very, very passionate about the food and about the food industry. We're not just the kind of people who happen to work in a restaurant by default. We really believe in the product. We believe in the food. We believe in hospitality. And to us, those things are just astronomically important. And our chef believes the same way. We believe in what's called a slow food movement, where most of our vegetables, most of our herbs and spices are from smaller independent farms that we purchase this stuff from. They call them foraged foods. You know, people actually go out and they pick this stuff. It's not big mass marketed farms that we use. Our proteins, as far as the meats are concerned, come from smaller, free-range organic farms out in Kansas, out in South Carolina. So it's very important to us to keep quality at the forefront. And so our chef, Chef Lenny Judas, who's just an absolute amazing, amazing chef, really tries to marry a lot of the newer modern themes that's happening in the food industry, yet keeping it simple so that someone doesn't have to come in and feel, you know, intimidated about the menu and say, oh, well, I don't know what, you know, this particular thing is. Or, you know, we're certainly not going to be the type of restaurant that's serving, you know, braised pork cheeks with,
right.
Raw quail eggs, you know.
Right. The thing that I wanted to kind of get into, like, now the I remember, and I wanted to get the info. I had this particular kind of mozzarella that I've never had before. What is it called?
The burrata.
Can
we
you
have
spell that?
A little. Yeah,
can
it's
you spell
B.
That? Yeah.
U R R A T as in Tom A.
Okay.
And, again, it's one of the things that we try to do here when I say that we try to really marry some of the edginess of what's happening in the world of cuisine with keeping it down to earth so that all of our friends and all of our guests will accept it as well. So instead of having your traditional kind of mozzarella and tomatoes, what we like to do is we use a Kumato tomato, which is kind of a purplish tomato, and
right,
the burrata
and spell
cheese.
That one.
And what?
Spell that.
Yeah, and the burrata actually is
the
kind
tomato.
Of a mozzarella. The Kumato tomato.
Yeah, Kumato. Spell that.
K.
Yeah.
U. M.
Yeah.
A.
Yeah.
T.
Yeah.
Oh. And that's a purplish kind of tomato.
Okay.
Wild tomato, and then we serve that along with the burrata. And the burrata, again, is kind of is your traditional mozzarella cheese. But what they do is they kind of put in some ricotta inside of it, and it comes kind of in balloons. So it's kind of like a filled, and it's all fresh, and it's all freshly made, and it comes filled. So you get a nice, the wonderful saltiness and texture of the mozzarella. that we all love, and then you get the creaminess of the ricotta that comes out. And along with that, we serve that with an aged balsamic vinegar, fresh basil, Spanish extra virgin olive oil. And then the real kicker is we use, the chef prepares balsamic caviar, which we take if I'm not mistaken, it's very cold balsamic vinegar dropped into extremely hot extra virgin olive oil, and what happens is they pool and make little pellets of balsamic vinegar.
Oh, is that what how he does that? I was curious about that. It does look like it looks like caviar.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, Chef Lenny is he really, again, you know, really keeps up with everything and the different trends. You know, food trends, there's always ebb and flows of everything. So, you know, the best way to keep, you know, the restaurant on par and on track is to continuously try to offer something inventive and different while keeping the traditional values of hospitality and good food.
Yeah. Now, I'm trying to remember all the things. I had something, I think. Did I have shrimp?
We've got amazing stuff. We have, now, you're located where?
Queens, New York City.
Okay, yeah. In the South. Now, I'm from Chicago, and my wife is from Montreal. In the South, they have a delicacy that they like to call shrimp and grits. Now,
yes.
Coming from the North, when I heard of shrimp and grits, I thought to myself, there's not any way I'm going to touch something like that. But when I saw it prepared and we had it, it was probably one of the most amazing dishes I'd ever had. What we do is we take fresh, wild Florida rock shrimp, or not the rock shrimp, we take Florida wild shrimp, and we kind of pan-sear that and prepare that with some applewood smoked bacon. And we have what's called Anson Mills grits, which is organic grits. We fold in some Trigola cheese. And Trigola is from the same region as Asiago, so it's a very, very hard, very salty tasting cheese. We fold that in to that with the bacon, along with the shrimp that'll go on alongside the plate. And then we finish off the dish with an amazing maple gastrique. And what gastrique is that's a very classic French sauce that has 50, it's kind of like a 50-50 deal where you put, it's 50% vinegar and 50% sugar. And what we do is we spike ours with maple syrup.
Wow.
So the whole dish is just everything that you love about any other dish this has. It has the saltiness, it has the smokiness, it has the sweetness. I mean, it's just a savory. It's an amazing dish.
Okay. What I'm doing now is I'm opening up my photo file so I could
Well, I mean, we've got fantastic stuff up
there.
So
I can remember what I was eating.
Yeah, you know, we have the grilled mahi, we have a swordfish, we have a local snapper, ahi tuna, diver scallops. I mean, it's just everything, you know, everything. We have an amazing dish.
All right, just got the photos here. Okay.
Excellent.
Let's see. Oh, that was the shrimp and the, okay. I think that's shrimp and, was it a crab cake? Let's see.
Yeah, we have crab cakes as well.
Crab
absolutely.
Cake, yep, that's what I see,
yeah.
Crab cake.
Yeah, the crab cake, what we like to do with the crab cake is we actually top our crab cake off with some yuzu tobiko, which is a flying fish roe, kind of like a sushi-ish type of thing.
Mm-hmm. And
what
I
did you like best when you...
I liked it all. It wasn't the best.
Good answer.
I liked it all. I mean... In terms of the things like I found different, it's like I enjoyed the mozzarella because it was, and you know, and that whole thing because it was different from anything I've had. The problem is,
right.
I'm looking at photos. Oh, there was the alligator bites.
Ah, yeah, absolutely.
I've had that
fresh
also.
Alligator.
And let's
see. You know,
see.
Years ago, the real neat thing about Professor Hurst. when he had this restaurant in the late 70s, early 80s. What he did is he was really, again, on the forefront of a lot of different different ideas. And what he had done is he had built his own kind of refrigeration unit and would travel all over the world buying these exotic types of meat. And he would buy, you know, just hundreds and pounds of kangaroo or ostrich or crocodile. I mean, just really outrageous stuff. And then we would serve it here at the 15th Street Fisheries. And now, of course, during the late 80s, the food trends kind of moved away, and people weren't really all that much interested in that type of exotic foods that they once were, you know?
Right. Now, the other things I would tell you, except there, I videoed them, and I don't want to play the videos. I was looking, I went, oh, they're all videos. I have to, I have to put on YouTube so I can,
you know,
put it
our biggest thing is, biggest thing here, you know, really, honestly, is having great food and amazing hospitality for our guests. You know, it's very easy to especially if you're a talented chef, such as Chef Lenny, where it's easy to say, you know, I'm going to prepare these outrageous, pretentious type of dishes.
Right.
That you see sometimes in the world of celebrity chefs where, you know, you look on TV and these people are preparing these, you know, classical French-tasting, you know, dishes that realistically nobody is going to eat. I mean, you know, when you go out to eat, you know, sometimes you don't want that rich, deep, you know, I mean, we like to eat. And a lot of our guests are from the North, and a lot of our guests are from the Midwest. And we want to make sure that although we want to introduce our guests to new and exciting things that are happening in the food industry today, we don't want to make it where you're not going to recognize anything.
Oh, sure, right.
We want to keep those, you know, we want to keep those flavors that you're used to having, you know. And you know, we really try to maintain that. And of course, you know, like I say, the food aspect is 95% of it. Our hospitality here, you know, we train our staff. We go through rigorous training here and really pride ourselves on having some of the best hospitality around as far as taking care of our guests and making sure that everything, you know, we believe with our food as well as our hospitality to make connections with our guests and to build experiences and memories for our guests. You know, we want our guests to come inside this restaurant such as yourself, have amazing food, be treated as they should as a guest in our home. And when they leave, we don't want them to be satisfied. We want them to be raving fans. We want them to get on the phone and to call their friends and to say, I just had an amazing experience. The food was amazing. My service was amazing. The management was amazing. The drinks were amazing. And we really try very hard to accomplish that every single night.
Well, you did it with me.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Very important.
I also wanted to comment on the desserts because you have a separate pastry chef, too.
We are one of the few, if not the only, full-service restaurant that has a salaried executive pastry chef on duty who prepares all of the desserts and produces all the desserts. We make our own ice cream, our own sauces, our ganaches, our cakes, our creams, our pies, anything that you're going to eat here coming from our dessert menu is completely made from the ground up. I've worked in many, many establishments, many fine dining places and casual restaurants, and there's always a couple things on the menu that restaurants will buy from an outside vendor, perhaps.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know? And here, it's amazing. It's amazing. It truly is amazing.
Yeah, I was able to sample some of the items. The thing I thought was most, I guess, I say interesting. I hate to use the word interesting, but that, you know, was the sorbet, was it made from wine, I believe?
Oh, you had the sangria. I think it was the sangria sorbet.
I don't know if it was sangria. It was, but it was something.
Oh, the Prosecco. I think it was Prosecco sorbet. You know, the neat thing about it is Chef Sapir is fantastic because we make our own ice creams and we make our own desserts and we make our own things. We kind of, you know, before the hours of operation, we're able to kind of fool around a lot, you know, and we're able to test out different flavors and test out different stuff, you know. And sometimes, you know, we'll just get the idea, you know, the Chef Sapir will get the idea of, let me, you know, he'll come to me and he'll say, let me get a bottle of champagne. And then, you know, a couple hours later, he'll have everybody tasting champagne-flavored sorbet or guava ice cream with blueberry and strawberry, you know. And some of the flavors really work, and we'll put it on the menu for that night. And sometimes the flavors don't work, and we got to go back to the drawing board, and he starts again. But I think what you were talking about is the Prosecco – it was the Prosecco champagne sorbet that we had actually floating in a little bit of champagne as well.
No, this was just a scoop of what looked like something that was a red wine. But
Could have been the Cabernet.
The thing that interested me about it is that it didn't have, and I've only tasted one sorbet before that was made with wine,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't care for it. And this one didn't have that.
The bite at the end.
Yes, it didn't have the bite.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure whether it makes a difference of the wine that you use or the sugar content or how you, obviously you have to cook off the wine first. So there's no alcohol.
You know, one of the things that is so great is that, you know, being involved in this restaurant is, I'm going to be honest, I don't know much about cooking. I know what tastes good.
Yeah.
I know what looks good. And I know, and you know, being the assistant general manager here, I know what happens in the front. But Chef Sapir with his pastries, Chef Lenny with the kitchen, you know, those guys are experts at what they do, and it comes across in their food. And so I would be, you know, really edging on being wrong if I even tried to tell you if it was a certain type of wine or not. I'm going to chalk it up to having him just being an amazing pastry chef who's able to really, you know exactly what kind of equal parts of what and, you know, doing that. Sometimes I see Chef Sapir using arithmetic trying to figure out flavors and different combinations of stuff, and I just say, wow, wow.
Well, the one thing I want to also comment is that the water taxi stops right there.
Yeah, listen, we being here for so long and having such a tremendous amount of support in the community and the amount that we give back to our community here, you know, again, being a restaurant that caters tremendously to our guests' needs and wants and desires, and the ability to consistently put out great food, great menus because of our chef, and the hospitality that we share, we've developed a reputation in the community where the concierge, you know, we're located right across the water from Port Everglades where all of the major cruise ships dock. We're
right.
Also about a half a mile away from the Fort Lauderdale International Airport.
Okay.
Where
I
all
to,
your major...
I hate to, like, to cut you off, but this show is going to end in 58
okay.
seconds. So I want to thank you
absolutely.
Very much for
visit
being
our,
on and telling
visit
us.
Our, yeah, and you can visit our website at www.15streetfisheries.com. You can find us on Open Table if you're going to be in the area. Go to Open Table, 15th Street Fisheries. You can make reservations online. And you can ask for myself or Carlos Rivas or the chef, Lenny Judas.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be more than happy to take care of all of your listeners, as well as yourself the next time you're back in South Florida.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, and have
Thank
a great
you.
Evening.
Excellent. You as well. Thank you.
Okay, bye. And the show now goes.